Going to school might seem like an ordinary rite of passage for children, but in Indian country, school has long meant assimilation and discrimination. It's why, back in the 1950s, the two tribes on the Wind River Reservation began the arduous process of starting their own school. A new book called Sovereign Schools, How Shoshones and Arapahoes Created a High School on the Wind River Reservation, chronicles the trials and tribulations of making that dream a reality. Author Martha Louise Hibb has a vocal impairment that makes her difficult to understand on the radio, but her close friend and personal editor Carol Atkinson joined Wyoming Public Radio's Melody Edwards. Atkinson starts by explaining how Hibb began writing the book as a psychiatrist for the reservation school district.
During her first year there, the superintendent of the school suggested that each person, each staff member, do something about the school in terms of the history or the research, whatever it was. And so Martha was casting about for a topic, and some very clever elders on the reservation steered her toward a meeting at which one of the other elders said something about the school having a very interesting history. And so that's what Martha started on. And she probably could have written a 20 or 30 page report and met her responsibilities. But she got captured by the story. And it just went on and on and on.
You know, I wonder if you can start by talking a little bit about where sort of the history of education begins on the Wind River Reservation.
Well, I can't give you an exact date, but it started back in the boarding school days. And those boarding schools continued for a long time. Go ahead.
Well, it was 1884 when the first boarding school, an Episcopal school, started there. But before that, they were sending kids to Carlisle, Pennsylvania, for up to 8 years at a time.
The thing to mention there is the death rate. It was just incredible. And the disease rates were very, very high. In most of the boarding schools, the kids were not allowed to speak their own language or to maintain any of their own traditions. And it wasn't uncommon for them to come into the boarding school and immediately get their hair cut off and have to change clothes into something that was totally foreign to them. And the trauma rate, I mean, it was out of this world. It was awful.
Hibb says that in the 1950s, indigenous students were integrated in county schools. There, they experienced discrimination. One student recalled being asked to enter through a back door. Native basketball players didn't get a ride on the bus, but had to hitchhike.
I think I see the whole situation as being part of the general civil rights movement, and it came to the reservation a little late. People decided that what was happening in the schools wasn't working for them. They needed to get equality in the schools. They needed to have some control in the school. And that was beginning to percolate in not just on Wind River, but some of the other reservations as well.
And it seems like that there was also right around this time, especially those early 70s, that the American Indian Movement began.
Yes.
And so there was, and education seems like that was something that was of interest to the American Indian Movement as well.
AIM was a little bit more radical, and the Arapaho and the Shoshone on the Wind River Reservation didn't think that that was the way for them to go. And they distanced themselves from the more radical aspects of AIM and stuck with a very civilized effort, working with politicians, working with anybody who would help them out to get their own school on the reservation without any kind of radicalization.
And what was the reaction to, you know, the state and to the school districts when the tribes started suggesting that this might be a better solution for their community?
The funding of schools is a very, very complicated issue. And the public schools got money for each Indian student, whether the student was attending that day or not. The situation in Fremont County, which is where the Wind River Reservation is, was very complex, with some of the towns having much better tax base than others. The federal government payments to the local schools was very significant in the operation of those schools. And to lose those was a big threat. And they didn't want the school, the reservation, to have its own school because they would lose all of that money. But the Indians were very good at just maintaining. One of the more interesting parts of it is that the Arapaho and the Shoshone, for historical reasons, had been rivals. And when the Arapaho were brought onto the Shoshone reservation, it was this perfect setup for resentment and anger. And so there was tension between the tribes before any of the school issue came up. And one of the remarkable things on the Wind River Reservation is how the two tribes were able to work together and solve their disputes to then proceed and work toward a common goal.
What was the reaction of tribal leaders? How did they proceed? How did they decide which way to go next? Did they decide that it was time to get legal help, or what happened next?
Well, several things happened in a short period of time. They did have legal help. They had an attorney named Gross who had done some work on other reservations, came to help them. And they also went to Washington frequently, worked with congressmen. Senators from Wyoming were helpful. Senator Kennedy and his committee were very helpful. The BIA was not very helpful. The BIA was essentially an adversary in many of these cases. And it really seemed to me to be just a bureaucratic issue, not a rational issue. President Nixon was first encouraging for Indian sovereignty and then in practice totally against it.
Hip says back at home, tribal leaders took control of a local education committee and were able to succeed at convincing county officials to open the school. Meanwhile, at the national level, a coalition of tribes worked together to open their own schools. Wyoming Indian High School was considered the flagship of the movement because the effort was the most organized. The school now teaches children their native languages and is taught mostly by native teachers. Well, thank you both so much for taking some time to talk about this really fascinating story about Wyoming Indian High School.
Thank you.
That was Wyoming Public Radio's Melody Edwards talking with friend and personal editor Carol Atkinson and Sovereign Schools author Martha Louise Hipp.